welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
From Syosset Library's Turn the Page podcast. If I sound super excited, I am because we have an amazing guest here today. Her body of work is so big and expansive and amazing that before I was getting ready for this, when I was doing my research, I'm like, I don't even know where to begin. But I think I found a place. And we'll get there. So first, I'm going to allow her to introduce herself, and then we'll go from there. So please tell everybody who you are.
Oh, well, good morning, Jessica. It's Carol Kane, daughter of Joy and Michael Kane, sister of Anina.
We're so happy to have you here. And also happy belated birthday. I believe the day that we are recording this, was yesterday your birthday?
It was. Thank you.
You are welcome. Your body of work is so extensive. And I was just going through everything. And I was talking to one of my coworkers, Sharon, yesterday. And I was like, I am so excited about this interview with Carol Kane. And I don't even know where to begin. And we were all talking and she's like, you have to ask her about Scrooged. She's my favorite part of that movie. That's one of the best movies. And I'm like, I know. But then I'm thinking to myself, but watching The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt got me through the first part of right after I had my kids. That was something that was, you know, a bright spot. And it had Carol Kane in it, and it was just delightful. And then I just started thinking, so being that this is the Syosset Library, we don't always have everything that is Syosset specific on the podcast. And we don't, the way that we look at it, everything is library specific because libraries extend into everything, information, entertainment, and all of that. But if we wanted to just sort of begin at a place, let's begin in Syosset at this beautiful movie theater that does not exist anymore, but has come up several times in this podcast. It had beautiful red velvet curtains, and I was sitting with my parents in the movie theater, and the curtains parted. It had a balcony, a mezzanine, and I saw The Princess Bride for the first time. And that movie, I'm sure as you know, because you're probably quoted it, every day of your life, was one of the most influential movies, I think, of my childhood. The wit was so great, and just the story was so great. And then I was also slightly traumatized by Mandy Patinkin getting stabbed in that one scene. It looked so painful. It was definitely, it made an impression, but I loved it. And of course, my husband and I, being such a huge fan, we have Carrie Elwes's memoir, and your scene with Billy Crystal was such a short scene, but it stole the show in so many ways. And in Carrie's memoir, he talks about that as well. You were 34 when you made that particular scene.
Oh, gosh, I don't even know. That's shocking to me to think that I was 34. I, of course, thought of myself as extremely mature. I guess, you know, work-wise, I've been professional since I was 14. By professional, I mean I was in the Actors Equity Association, the Theater Union, and also the Screen Actors Guild, the Film and TV Union. So that was 20 years later. So I guess in terms of like years of work, I was relatively mature, but boy, I guess I was probably really young. And I don't get it. I don't understand how, you know, as I look back on my career, I have to say there's so many things that happened to me that I think, how could I have been that fortunate? You know, how could I have been 34 years old and gotten a call? I was doing a play, a Beth Henley play called The Lucky Spot. And I just got a call, like out in the middle of nowhere, from Rob Reiner saying, would I do this movie? And I just, looking back, it seems like a miracle to me. You're going to be Billy Crystal's wife. And it was thrilling. And Billy was such a doll. I was living in LA for work at that time, except for not when I was doing the play, and Billy lives here, and he came over to my apartment, and we put together, you know, we talked about our backstory. We both read the book and underlined it and improvised together a more backstory for Miracle Max and Valerie. And so that by the time we got to London, you know, we had a relationship going, and I really appreciated the hard work. And then, of course, you know, with Billy, you just like hold on to his coattails and then just try and keep up because he's such a genius. And you may have heard the, speaking of Mandy Patinkin getting stabbed, I think he was fine with the stabbing.
He was fine, yes.
You may have heard this story probably because I think Carrie tells it in the book that Mandy actually fractured a rib during the filming of that scene because he was trying so hard not to laugh at Billy because, you know, everyone was supposed to be morose because the prince was dying, all mostly dead. And Mandy was trying to laugh so hard that he fractured a rib.
Yeah, and that really was very funny to me because, of course, you know, as like, man, I was young. I was maybe like 8 when I saw that movie, like seeing this outpouring of blood. I was like, oh, no. But just like the fact that the injury that happened on set was because of joy.
Yes, because
of that particular actor, I thought
was overload of joy.
Yes.
And yeah. By the way, speaking the same, that also Rob, you know, was, you know, you have to be really quiet behind the camera because you could ruin your takes if you start laughing. And Rob was like, forget it. He just couldn't stop laughing behind the camera. So that was so great.
Well, whatever. First of all, you were nominated for an Academy Award for that role, I believe.
No, I was nominated for an Academy Award for a movie called Hester Street.
Okay.
Nominated for Best Actress. I was, again, like, incredibly fortunate. I was 23 and I got nominated. Yeah.
That's awesome. We will get back to that because we'll work our way backwards. But what I wanted to say, just kind of, you know, just on this point, was that whatever backstory you and Billy Crystal came up with, that couple, like, seemed lived in. That was a couple that had been together for a very long time and had some stories. And I think anybody who watches the movie and has watched it would probably have been more than happy to sit at the table with Miracle Max and Valerie and hear them argue about whatever happened before.
Yeah. Well, and of course there is also it's the book, it's William Goldman's book that's so brilliant, but yeah.
Yes.
Thank you, that's a great compliment.
No, it really is. And yes, I have a special edition of William Goldman's book as well. So
definitely. Oh, goodness.
Yes, big fans in my household. And we were just discussing when to share the story, when to share the movie with our kids. So
what do you think? Soon, right?
Soon, they're 6. So if I was 8, I think they can handle it at 6. And I think that, like I said, like the wit, you know, and at the library, there have been many times where I've gotten, because I worked in children's for a while, parents who wanted a movie that they could enjoy with their children who were just about that age. And I would always tell them The Princess Bride. And one of my favorite stories was I had this one family and they had two boys and one girl. And I said, you've never seen The Princess Bride? And they're like, no. And I'm like, how is that even possible?
Yeah.
So I said, you have to see it. And, you know, of course, like the boys were trying to be cool and they're like, oh, I don't want to watch a movie called The Princess Bride. And the next time I saw them, they were quoting everything from the movie. And like the scene with Vizzini and Andre the Giant, anybody got a peanut, you know, anybody have a peanut, they were rhyming. So no matter what the resistance, you know, be it like, oh, this sounds like a kissing book, or
that,
you know,
that's the thing, that's the story. I mean, that's how it starts, with Peter Bach and telling the story to his very aggravated grandson, doesn't want to hear about kissing. And so it's the story repeats itself in the watching of the movie.
Boys
that see the picture of the princess and the prince, and they don't want to see it, and then suddenly they're lost in they're lost in it.
And of course, my, you know,
the rodents of unusual size.
Yes, the rodents of unusual size. And also, you know, I always found it funny that the pirate was really the hero in that story. I mean, Wesley was dreamy when he was the farm boy, but when he had that little bit of snark, he became swoon worthy.
Yes.
So let's get back to as close to the beginning as possible. So you began acting when you were 14?
I did. I began acting when I was like six, because my mother took me to see a play in a children's theater, you know, in Cleveland, Ohio, where I was born. And the second I saw my first play, I just fell madly in love, you know, with the notion of wanting to be someone other than I was, with the freedom of living in a character, one could say, if you want to be very psychological about it, that my family was not in a very happy way, you know, and so I think I saw this, as I say, this freedom to imagine and create and be somewhere else and someone else. And I was just smitten, and it never went away. And so then my mother had to schlep me down to the theater, and I didn't care if I would be, you know, sewing sequins on or serving hot dogs or whatever, just to be around it. And then my mom moved to New York. My parents separated, and they sent me to a boarding school named Cherry Lawn in Connecticut, which is no longer there, which its biggest claim to fame, and it's a very big one, is that Mike Nichols went there. And they had an extraordinary theater department. And so when I was 12 and I went there, and then I insisted that I enroll in professional children's school in New York. And I did, and I just started working. My first professional play was The Prime of Miss Jean Brodie on the Road with Tammy Grimes. So it was a great way to start.
Yeah, absolutely. I saw the film version, I think.
Maggie Smith.
Yeah, when I was 12. And also you were on Broadway, you played Madame Marrable in Wicked.
I did. I played her for quite some time. That was really fun. My first professional musical.
Really? Mm-hmm. Wow. I did not actually know that.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, what was it? Funny enough, there's a Syosset connection there as well, because Adina Menzel, who's the first Elphaba, was a Syosset alumni.
Oh, is she? Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, that's great.
Yeah, it's always crazy, like, far the Syosset web seems to spread. Yeah.
Well, and the same with, you know, Cleveland, Ohio, Paul Newman. And I mean, there's like so many well-known actors that come from Cleveland, Ohio. Who'd have thunk it, right?
Yeah, it's weird. It is one of those things, I think, where people don't expect, because I think like people expect that either if you're, you know, like actors just sort of spawn from either New York City or from LA. But there's other places that seem to, you know, I mean, there's plenty of other places in the world and in the country. And, you know, maybe eventually they gravitate towards there because that's where like the filming and the opportunities are.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So was your when you started acting, the movie that you were nominated for, you said you were 23? When that one came,
yeah, Hester Street. It was, which was an extraordinary accomplishment on the part of a woman named Joan Silver, who wrote and directed it. And it was produced by her husband, Ray Silver. They were both from Cleveland also, by the way. And my father and mother knew them in Cleveland. And my father, Michael Caine, designed a temple that Ray Silver's father was the rabbi in. And anyway, she wrote this extraordinary script, which... my experience of reading that script was that I was watching the movie when I read it. That's how great it was. And I think it cost $375,000, black and white. And somehow, you know, I got nominated for Academy Award for that. But the part was so exquisite. It was so brilliantly written and the story was so great. And yeah, so that was quite an event for me.
is there a part you think that you hold most dear, or maybe
well there are many parts, but I would say that, you know, I could say that the role of Gittle in Hester Street was probably the most complex. It was a starring role, et cetera, et cetera. There are also small parts I've done that I love. I mean, my first role in a movie was in Carnal Knowledge, directed by Mike Nichols, and I didn't even have any lines, and I treasure that. You couldn't start in a better way than to start under the wing of Mike Nichols, you know. And then I did The Last Detail with Hal Ashby directed, both of those, by the way, with Jack Nicholson, which was just so great. And, you know, so there are a lot. And Scrooged, I love that character. Michael O'Donoghue, who is Mr. Mike on Saturday Night Live, he and Mitch Glazer wrote that script. And I mean, I just was so, well, that was so much fun, that crazy violent fairy.
Oh my God. Yes.
Yeah, you know, so I'm in love with different parts for different reasons would be the most accurate way to put it. And also different experiences for different reasons, the process being a great one, or the director being a great one, or, you know.
Yeah, that all makes sense. And as soon as you mentioned the violent fairy, it all started coming back to me, how much I enjoyed that role in general. I think like a story like A Christmas Carol is, I mean, there's so many retellings of different stories, but for some reason, every time that one is retold, it's like fresh.
Yeah.
You know, I think like from everything from like Mickey's Christmas Carol to Scrooge to the Muppet Christmas Carol, which We watch every year, and every year that scene with was it? It's Michael Caine, but that's not your father, right? It's a different Michael Caine. Yes, where they're all singing about him behind his back, and I say to my husband, or whoever I'm watching it with, I'm like, maybe he'd be nicer if they weren't singing mean things behind his back. And then they have that first scene and I'm like, actually, no, he deserved all of that. But it's like, it's such a great ground story to bring in fresh material. And I had so much fun watching Scrooged, and you brought so much joy to a story that I guess is kind of, it is kind of a dark story when you think about it. I also very recently found out, number one, that Charles Dickens wrote tons of Christmas stories after that, trying to recapture.
Really? I didn't know that.
Not all of them were good, from what I understand. But also that telling ghost stories during Christmas used to be a tradition.
Yeah, I didn't know that either.
But you are part of that tradition now, so.
Part of it, yay!
Yay! So right now, so the last two things, you are in the Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, which I mentioned before, was something that I watched between that and Fraggle Rock. That was pretty much the only way I got through the first, my maternity leave. You know, I was home from the library with twins, and it's exhausting, and
it's like a
constant marathon, and you have to sort of find things that are going to keep your attention. And something about a story about a young woman who escaped, I mean, not that I felt like, you know, I was in Kimmy's situation, but was sort of escaping a situation of captivity and finding this absurdity in this world, really helped. And you were a joy to watch on that as well as her landlady. How did you get that particular role as Lillian?
Just incredible stroke of luck, which is that I just got a call. I mean, I just got a call to come in and meet with Tina Fey and Robert Carlock and Jeffrey Richmond, who's Tina's husband, who's a brilliant composer, does all the music. I just went in there and they offered it to me again. It's just like, when I think of these things, I'm awestruck that they happened, you know? And because Tina Fey, my God, I just have always been in worship of her, you know, and continue to be. So that was like a dream. It probably sounds like I'm being, making it up how grateful I am, but I'm not.
No, I think it's like, it's very natural, because like, it's funny to hear you say it's like a dream, and, you know, to myself, and I'm sure everybody who's experienced it, like, they can't imagine anybody else in that role.
Thank you.
So I know what you're working on right now, but would you like to tell our audience what you're working on?
Sure. I am working on the second season of an Amazon series called Hunters, which is as far cry from Kimmy Schmidt as you could get. It's pretty very dark and violent, although there is a lot of humor in it. But it's basically, the story is takes place in the 70s in New York, and it's about a group of sort of ragtaggle strangers who come together under the auspices of a character named Meyer, who's played by Al Pacino. And they are hunting Nazis that live in America that were brought over by our government. And the basis for the series is 100% true. There was something called Operation Paperclip, where the American government fought with the Russian government to get the best minds for the space program and in other areas of our government. They were even in the White House. They were Nazis, and we financed them coming over and changed their identities, et cetera, et cetera. So that's the true basis for the series. It's brilliantly written and extraordinary cast. There are 10 that are currently on Amazon, and then 8 more that we're shooting now. And there's a new character played by Jennifer Jason Leigh, who I just think is so brilliant. So I'm excited about that. And Al is back. And
I'm not giving any spoilers, but that's, yes, I was going to say, will he be back? But of course he'll be back. He's like iconic.
He is very much back. Although when we wrapped up last season, we didn't know that he'd be back because, well, I guess I better not say, but it doesn't end well for him at the end of the first 10. And yet somehow he's back. So, and that's wonderful because he's so brilliant in the role.
I have to say the color palette in that particular series is beautiful. It's like, it's almost like it has that like Tarantino feel where there's so much color associated with just different characters and the different factions.
Yeah.
And it's weird because like when I was born in 79. So, you know, I experienced the 80s, and like, I always joke that the 80s was covered in like cigarette dust to me. Like everywhere I went, there were ashes, and there was the smoking section and the non-smoking section. And when I look back at pictures of the 70s, it seems similar, but the colors in the photographs are always faded.
Yeah.
So I enjoy watching that depict the colors as so vibrant and alive, and for a show as off the walls as that, and that gets dark, it almost adds to the humor part because the palette
is
a character.
Yes, it's a sort of pop colors, and the first episode, Dylan Baker's character is so wild in the first episode. Nobody, there's no way to prepare anyone for what happens in the first 15 minutes of the series, but no way to prepare, but just, it's a ride. It's quite a ride.
And I was very excited when you showed up on the screen at the end of that first episode. I had no idea. I was like, what? And Carol Kane is in this too. This is awesome.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, I love my part. I play a character named Mindy, who was a survivor of the camps, along with Jeannie Berlin's character, Ruth, and Al's character, Meyer. And my husband, played by Saul Rubinek. The four of us are survivors, and the other hunters have just come from a whole random selection of people that you wouldn't expect.
Well, I don't want to keep you for too long, but I want to thank you for chatting. This was absolutely amazing. I'm sure our listeners will enjoy it immensely. And I'm excited to see what's happening. I mean, I know the show was renewed, but then COVID made everything very difficult for a while as far as production.
So now we're back, but it's been quite a while. And so it's wild and exciting to be back. And thank you. This has been a great pleasure.
Well, you're always welcome back. If there's ever any virtually or just in general at Syosset. And thanks so much. So once again, this was Jessica with the Syosset Libraries podcast, Turn the Page. Our guest today was the amazing
Carol Kane, but I'm not supposed to say that about myself.
We are going to close this chapter. Have a wonderful day.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.